now. Detonate the reality bomb!
Change has come to America.
Some alien race to come down and threaten us.
Is the singularity near?
The military-industrial complex.
The truth is out there.
The seven mountains of the influencers of culture.
To be as gods, you know,
catapult to propaganda.
From a mostly secure, undisclosed, split-level location on a cul-de-sac somewhere in the heartland of America, this is A View from the Bunker. Now, here's Derek Gilbert.
There's a song I used to sing with a gospel quartet recently back in Illinois, written during the early days of World War II when things looked very dark. Troublesome times are here, filling men's hearts with fear. Freedom we all hold dear now is at stake. Those words have never been more true than they are right now. Welcome to A View from the Bunker. I'm Derek Gilbert. Our guest is a prolific writer, speaker, author, and television host. He is the author of numerous books, including Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural, The Cosmic Chess Match, Down the Trail of the Nephilim, Volumes 1 and 2, his most recent book, which is due out very shortly, Days of Chaos. He's also the host and producer of the Watchers series of DVD programs, the most recent Watchers 9, Days of Chaos, also due out shortly. The host of Acceleration Radio on the web, our friend L.A. Marzulli. L.A., thanks for joining us today.
Derek, the pleasure is all mine. Thanks for having me here. Love it.
Watched the trailer for Watchers 9 just before the program, and boy, if that isn't one to wake people up, I don't know what is. Richard Shaw has done a magnificent job with the trailer. It's the kind of thing that makes me really glad we don't live in an urban area anymore, but it's got me starting to think, you know, maybe we need, walls and barbed wire fence around the property. That's not the answer, of course, obviously. What is the answer, and what are you hoping to communicate with the book and Watchers 9, Days of Chaos?
Well, first of all, thanks again for having me on the show. It's always great to be here. But Richard Shaw is the director, producer. He actually hosts two of the segments, one on the Gematria, and he does this in Israel, which footage that he did. And he also went back and looked at the Krumburgaz UFO footage and discovered what we believe is a third entity, a third being, which is moving at a much faster speed, which is called time dilation. And it's fascinating. Segments in the Watchers 9. Watchers 9 is an hour and 50 minutes, 1 hour and 50 minutes long. It's almost 2 hours long, incredible. So it's really our longest show. And, this is the first time, Eric, I'll sort of tip my hand here. At the very end, I actually weigh in for the first time and talk about Yeshua. And I say a line, basically, it's this, that if you think you know him, but you don't know him, you don't know him. And the reason why we did that this time is we felt like after 8 installments, we had sort of earned the right to just exhort folks who might think they know Jesus because they went to Sunday school a couple of times or they were in some church program at one time, but there's no personal relationship with them. And that was the whole point, that the viewer looks at in Watchers 9 really dovetails into the words of Yeshua almost 2,000 years ago, which talk about many will come in my name, saying I am the Messiah. There'll be wars, rumors of wars, famines, pestilence, earthquakes in diverse places, troublesome times. These are the focal points of Watchers 9, and we hammer them down. The one thing we don't do is at the very end, and we sort of do it at the very end, we just show clips of people who claim to be the Messiah. One of my favorites is this guy in Russia who has the long hair and the robes, and he walks around and pretends he's Jesus, and he's got thousands of followers, and they think he's Jesus. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. So isn't it interesting that almost 2,000 years ago, this itinerant rabbi with basically 12 disciples, that's it, makes a ridiculous statement like this: many will come in my name and say, I am the Messiah. I am the Mashiach. Don't believe them. I mean, what an absurd statement. What a statement really filled with hubris and conceit. Unless, of course, he is the Messiah. Unless, of course, he is the God-man. And, of course, we believe that he is. And so at the very end, you know, we talk about all the everything that the viewer has watched in the last hour and 50 minutes. My gosh, all the signs are here. Everything that Yeshua warns us about will sort of herald his second coming, will precede his second coming, will lead to what is known as the Great Tribulation, in my opinion, Derek, they're all firing on 8 cylinders, if I can use that analogy. Everything is happening in real time right now, and it's alarming. And it ain't going away, folks.
Chuck Missler was just here in the Ozarks. We had the it was really a blessing to talk with him, interview him for a couple of future episodes of Skywatch TV and a couple of the daily updates that we post to the internet. And he made the comment that for most people, Jesus, as you say, they really don't know who Jesus is. He said it's a cosmic case of mistaken identity, and it's one that has eternal consequences. You know, setting aside these posers like the guy in Russia, people get the biblical Jesus wrong too. What's wrong if we misidentify who he was and what his mission was?
Well, it's everything. I mean, it's funny. We both Richard and I have rabbis for friends, and a lot of people who are, you know, very Jewish in their belief. What's interesting is most of these people have never looked at the narrative in the New Testament. Most of the, with all due respect, they've never read it. They have no idea what's there. They think they know, but they don't know. And so, and a lot of it, unfortunately, has because of replacement theology in the church, supersessionism, all the pogroms that happened to the Jews over the years, the fact that specifically from Constantine, you know, to the present day, and even now with the present Pope, with all due respect to Francis, who in my opinion is no friend of Israel, calling for a Palestinian state, but I digress. The bottom line is, with a lot of these Jewish people, they've been taught from childhood that he was an imposter, he was a trick of HaSatan or Satan, as we would commonly refer to it. But they've never read the biblical narrative. They've never, and they wouldn't be caught dead with that book. And we've heard story after story of Jews who finally pick up the New Testament and read it, and then realize, oh my gosh, this is a Jewish book. And wait a minute, everybody here is writing in this thing. They're all Jews too. And that piques your curiosity. But I believe that there's a supernatural element to this, which is prophetic. As Paul tells us, the Jews are blinded in part, and they are blinded in a supernatural way, and which is, you know, bizarre to think about. But at one point, in the not too distant future, I hope, they, collective Israel, in my opinion, will look on him, Yeshua, whom they have pierced, and mourn for him as an only son. I believe in the literal interpretation of that, and I believe that we will see it in due time. But getting back on track here with the point of Yeshua, when Jesus is talking about the signs that will precede his second coming or his return, I mean, it's just a checklist. You know, earthquakes in diverse places. Last week we had the big 8.3 in Chile. It's not going away. The volcanic eruptions, the Fukushima disaster, the political unrest, the wars and rumors of wars. My gosh, let's look around the globe. Look at the way Ezekiel 38 and 39 prophecy seems to be shaping up now. Russia's all over the Middle East, in bed with the Iranians, propping up the Bashar al-Assad government in Syria. I mean, we are in unprecedented times, in my opinion. Then we see this great influx of Muslims into Europe, which in my opinion is basically a Muslim invasion. So the answer to all this is, first of all, a personal relationship with the living God, with the one who shed his blood on Calvary for us. And by doing that almost 2,000 years ago, he broke the stranglehold of a cosmic war, of a cosmic conflict that had been going on since Adam and Eve. And the seed of the woman, which became the Messiah, Yeshua or Jesus in the Greek, on Calvary, he changes everything. The sacrifice pays the price. It's over. Now he holds the title deed. He's going to return. He's going to set up a millennial kingdom. I'm a biblical literalist, and I believe that literally. He will set up a literal kingdom in Jerusalem, not Kansas City, not Paris, not, you know, Moscow. It'll be in Jerusalem, which is why Jerusalem is always the prize. So if you think you know him, but you don't know him, you don't know him. You don't know that he's the Prince of Peace. You don't understand that he can come into your life and meet you wherever you are. He already knows who you are, but he can meet you wherever you are, and you will begin to change. Because 35 years ago, and I don't say this proudly, But I state it because that's who I was. I was at Woodstock, and unlike our former President Clinton, I inhaled as deeply and as often as I possibly could. So 35 years ago, when I, you know, before I became born again, I was a drug-taking, occult-practicing, fornicating, guru-worshipping pagan. That's what I was, you know? And when I came to him, everything changed. I was dragged out of the kingdom of darkness into the kingdom of light, sort of kicking and screaming the whole way, not really sure what was going on. But, you know, that's 35 years ago. Now it's, you know, 9 films and 9 books later, and I've been a pastor and a worship leader and all this other stuff. I mean, all I do is talk about him 24 hours a day, because not only is he the Prince of Peace, but he is the true king. And when he does return, and I hope it's soon, because unless he returns soon, there might not be anything human to come back to. And that's a Tom Horn, you know, rabbit trail we can get down there with the whole transhumanist thing.
Right.
But it's true. It really is true. And I find it alarming. If you don't know him and you think you know him, you don't know him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the bottom line. If you think you know him, rather, but you don't know him, then you don't know him. And people need to understand that unless a person really can say, yeah, I know him. He's my Lord. He's my Savior. He's my King. He's my Redeemer. You know, he's my peace. You know, mm-hmm. my shield, my bulwark. I mean, all that. If you can say that, then you know him. I know you know him, Derek. I know him. But there's so many people out there who are just have this twisted view because of church or some of the hucksters on Christian TV or whatever, and that's not who he is.
Mm. Yeah, it's. Again, cosmic case of mistaken identity, and it's one that could affect your eternal destiny. You've been talking about the link between politics and prophecy for a long time. Obviously, your book titled Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural was kind of a tip-off. There's no place in the world that's more chaotic right now than the Middle East. And you mentioned Russia's new ventures in the Middle East. Once again, Vladimir Putin has outmaneuvered Barack Obama. They've essentially sent Marines, Air Force, Army into Syria to prop up Bashar al-Assad and have graciously invited the United States to participate in their coalition against the Islamic State. Now, what does the Obama administration do? Because they declared 4 years ago, President Obama declared that regime change in Syria was his official goal. Now, do we, the United States, join the coalition against the Islamic State, or do we publicly admit we only wanted to join the fight against the Islamic State after they took Damascus and wiped out Bashar al-Assad? The implication for Israel is rather serious, and this is why Benjamin Netanyahu and a group of Israeli military officials went to Moscow earlier this week to sit down with Vladimir Putin. With Russia in Syria, the Israeli Air Force no longer has free rein to strike against the flow of weapons from Iran through Syria to Hezbollah. What do you see happening there? Is this a prelude to an Ezekiel 38-39 Gog-Magog conflict?
Well, I certainly would lean towards that viewpoint, absolutely. And this is, you know, Bill Salas is obviously the author of Psalm 83 War,
mm-hmm.
You know, Israelistine and all that, and it's incredibly alarming. You know, I haven't talked to Bill since in a while, but I know he's looking at it the way we're all looking at it. You know, it's interesting, if I can digress just for a second here, Derek, how many people on the planet are really looking at what's going on with Russia and Putin and Syria and Iran in the light of Ezekiel 38-39? Just a handful. I mean, out of the 7 billion people on the planet, you know, only 2 billion of them are Christian. 1 billion of those are pretty much Catholic. So, you know, you got basically, you know, 800 million Christians out there. Out of that, what is really percentage of so-called Christians are even aware of the Ezekiel 38-39 prophecy, are yeah. looking at this this political intrigue, these political machinations happening in the Middle East through that biblical lens? That prophetic biblical lens, I would posit not many people at all. And the fact that you and I are talking about it, I mean, in a way, we're like a remnant. In a way, we're sort of like the vanguard trying to wave the flag and go, oh my gosh, this is happening. What we could see, and Bill and I have talked about this, you know, ad nauseum. No one really knows the sequence of events and how quickly things will come down. But we could have something like a Psalm 83 war, which would then trigger the Ezekiel 38 war. And perhaps the destruction of Damascus, which is mentioned in Isaiah 17, Damascus, right, the capital of Syria, Damascus, the oldest inhabited city on the planet, that, at least that we know about, that could trigger Psalm 83, that could trigger Ezekiel 38. Maybe Isaiah 17 is in the middle. You know, no one really knows, which is why we hold on to things extremely loosely. The bottom line is Israel is now, I mean, just a quick overview of the Middle East. Israel is now surrounded by those who pose a direct existential threat to her. There's no doubt about that. Hezbollah in the north, entrenched in Lebanon for all practical purposes. Hezbollah is the proxy of the Iranians. You've got Hamas in Gaza, and they are rearming with the tunnels. You know, most people in America don't understand that last war, what was really going on with the tunnels. Richard Shaw covered this in Torah Codes,
yes,
with Dan Gordon. It's just absolutely chilling. These tunnels went in sometimes well over a mile into Israeli territory, and they were set. What they were trying to do is to pop up in kibbutzes and kidnap and drug Israeli citizens and bring them back into Hamas held territory and hold them for ransom. And they were numerous tunnels. They were like, and the infrastructure there, Derek, and the cement and the concrete and the railroad tracks and all, everything that made these tunnels, you know, the Western media doesn't understand what the Israelis were facing. And I blogged about this morning. I actually still haven't finished the blog yet. It's called The Global Overview. What people don't really understand and they don't get is the only way that the Islamists in the Middle East will be satisfied is when Israel is no more. That's their end game. That's their goal. When Higazi, the fiery imam, this is years ago now, when Morsi was running for the umbrella of the Muslim Brotherhood. Morsi, of course, is now languishing in jail with a death sentence. So there's been another regime change in Egypt. The people didn't want Sharia law, but I digress. The bottom line is Higazi stands up and yells to tens of thousands of people in Tahrir Square in Egypt that the goal of the Islamic caliphate. Now, remember, everybody's trying to get a caliphate going here. ISIS is trying to establish their caliphate. Well, the Muslim Brotherhood is trying to establish their version of an Islamic caliphate over the entire area. And Higazi states this and states it unequivocally without any apologies and makes it very clear. He says, our capital will not be Mecca or Medina. Our capital will be Al-Quds. They never say Jerusalem, which is the Hebrew word. They say Al-Quds. And then thousands of people say in Arabic, the translation is, to Jerusalem we go, martyrs in the millions. Mm-hmm. Al-Quds, Rahim, da-da-da-da-team. I can't speak Arabic, but that's what they're yelling. To Jerusalem we go, martyrs in the millions. And it's amazing, Derek, why that is not shown on the 6 o'clock news. See, if the American people understood what was really going on there, then all of a sudden the Islamists who stand up at the New Jersey school meeting last week and are demanding that we get a holiday and all this other stuff, they don't. People, Americans, especially the left, you know, this whole political correct nonsense, or Ben Carson standing up and going, we can't have a Muslim president. He knows of which he speaks.
Yeah.
And the fact that these idiots in the left-wing media, you know, that these guys would be the first guys who would be beheaded under Sharia. They don't understand that,
mm-hmm,
because Sharia isn't tolerant of anything but strict adherence to the Islamic code, the Islamic law known as Sharia. And what there's a description that we saw in a video years ago of a woman, I think it's either in Indonesia or I think it's in Australia, and she says they are vipers in our laps. They come here and immediately they don't want to assimilate. They don't want our way of life. They want to impose their way of life on us. And that's exactly what we see happening in New Jersey. These Muslimas stand up, you know, with the headscarves and the whole little costume. They stand up and they start yelling and screaming. And, you know, pretty soon we will outnumber you. And that's what they go for. And you know what? They're right, because the Muslims have no birth control for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll have 4, 6, 8 kids. And meanwhile, over here, we abort our babies. We kill our babies.
Right.
So the birth rate is wacky. And Mark Stein wrote a wonderful book on this and talked about the negative birth rates in in places like Germany and France and basically all through Europe and Italy and Japan. Mm-hmm. And the only thing that offsets that in the U.S., because we have 60 million aborted babies in this country, the only thing that offsets that is the illegal immigration
right. By
people from south of the border into the country. That's why we barely have a positive birth rate in the country. So it's funny how – it's not funny. It's tragic how abortion has become the law of really on a global level. And what we see is negative birth rates in these countries. And now in Europe – and, of course, I'm all over the map here, but it's all related. Now we've got this invasion – of refugees from Syria, so-called refugees from Syria, about 1 million people mm-hmm. coming in. And this will change. This is an invasion force. It will change the cultural fabric of Europe, guaranteed. And I want to just add one thing. I was at a conference up in Minnesota last weekend, and one of the speakers up there had this had a clip, and he was talking about this, and I found it on the internet and posted it on the Global Overview on Monday. Saudi Arabia has a tent city,
mm-hmm.
and it's
yes.
air-conditioned.
Right.
It's an air-conditioned tent city that will hold upwards of 3 million people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? It's just sitting there unoccupied. So guess how many refugees from the Middle East the Saudis are taking?
That would be none.
Exactly. Absolutely. And
what is
doodly squat?
And what is zero, Alex? Yeah.
So and then the Saudis go, well, we will help you. We come to Germany. We're going to build 200 mosques. How about that? That's how they want to help the Europeans assimilate 1 million Muslims by mm-hmm. building 200 mosques. You just looked at the gates of Vienna being nulled, Charles Martel and the Battle of Tours.
Yep.
All that's for naught. And Europe will go Islam at this point, and it's tragic to see.
Well, the reaction, of course, is the rise of the ultra-nationalist right-wing parties in Europe, the National Front in France being one. We're looking at a situation in which, and by no means do I condone the actions took by Anders Breivik. He's the Norwegian who killed, what was it, 80-some youths at a camp in Norway.
He's a nutcase.
Yeah, to try to make a point. But we're looking
that's
at
not what we're talking about.
No, no, but we're looking at a situation where things may get so bad in Europe that for some on the fringe, the evil fringe, Anders Breivik may be considered a hero by some for what he did, which again was vile, evil, and absolutely anti-Christian. But there will be a pushback at some point. Europe will remember its Viking roots in places and or Saxon roots, and there will be trouble, even more chaos as we look at what's happening around the world. Situation let me change gears here, because we spend a lot of time talking about the Middle East, and that's something that we look at frequently because of the prophetic implications. But one of the aspects of the trailer from Days of Chaos, and you mentioned this early in the program here, dealt with Richard Shaw and his investigation into a recent UFO sighting. It was intriguing. It was very short, so I guess it achieved its purpose. It got me really interested in watching the whole video to find out more. What was the investigation that Richard undertook, and can you at least hint at what he may have discovered?
Well, this goes back into the work that Dr. Roger Lear did. Dr. Roger Lear, of course, passed away in 2013 or 2014, rather, and we miss him. Just a wonderful, wonderful friend, and he was in all of our Watchers series. We actually dedicated Watchers 8 to him. But Roger was flown to Turkey for a huge UFO symposium, and the reason why he was flown to Turkey was because of the Kumburgaz UFO sighting the year before. And what we saw was, or what the Turkish government realized, that for 2 years in a row, 2007, 2008, and then, of course, later in 2009, and that's the footage we have, a UFO appeared over Kumburgaz, over this lake in Kumburgaz, Turkey. And Roger stood on the lake with a camera guy, and they shot the thing in video. I mean, it's just incredible. And, you know, the guy has a camera mounted on a tripod, and He from a long shot, you see the moon, and you see a light below the moon. And then he zooms in very slowly. And, I mean, you know, this is not Photoshop, folks. This is the real deal. And as you zoom in, it's a craft. I mean, it's a craft. It's a classic UFO. It's a dish-shaped craft. And you zoom in further, he zooms in further, and you see two entities, which are the grays with the large heads and the black eyes. And, I mean, what do we do with that? And Roger filmed that for like 5 hours. Hmm. 5 hours. They sat there on the shore of a lake in Kumburgaz, Turkey, and filmed this craft. So what Richard did, and this is the work of this man by the name of Santiago. I can't think of his last name, but this man, Richard, got a hold of his stuff, and Santiago was able to discern what seemed to be another entity moving at a different speed. And in order to find that out, you had to really slow the film down, really slow the film down, and go frame by frame. So Richard didn't have the actual footage. He had the digital copy that he made with Roger. And he went and slowed it down. And sure enough, there seems to be another entity that's there that's moving very quickly within that whole scene that's happening. You have the ship that you see. There's like a window that's open, for lack of a better word, a portal, a doorway that's open. There are two grays that are standing there. There may be someone laying in front of them. We don't know. But then at a different speed is this entity, this alien being, which is coming in and out of the picture. And that's what Richard captured. And wow, we find that, of course, you know, it's startling. I remember the first time I saw the Kumburgaz UFO footage. I still maintain it's one of the best I've ever seen. And it's been vetted. The Turkish government vetted it. I mean, in my opinion, there can be little or no doubt that this is the real deal. And when I show this, and I always show the Kumburgaz UFO film at my conferences or, you know, places where I'm speaking, and people just sit there and you know, their jaws are on the ground because they've never seen anything quite like it. And I've never seen anything quite like it either. And so the fact that Richard was able to find this other alien being moving very quickly, it gets him a time dilation and the different properties of the space-time continuum. It gets into the properties of the first heaven where we are, the second heaven, which is the resting place or the abode of the fallen angelic hosts and other non-wanted entities, and of course the third heaven where the Most High God is. The biblical narrative states when Yeshua is taken by Satan to a high place and in a moment of time shown the kingdoms of the world. Now, is that literal or is that allegory? And in my opinion, it's literal. And what we're looking at here is time displacement or time dilation, that he is shown the kingdoms of the world in a twinkling of an eye, in a moment of time. But it's a moment of our time, where he's in another time-space continuum, for lack of a better word. He's in his reference of time is totally different. What's chilling about this is when we go into modernity and we go into the UFO record set by Travis Walton, and I've spoken to Travis more than one time. You know, Travis and I have a relationship when we talk, and, you know, it's not like I call him every day or something, but, you know, every now and then hey man, what's going on? What's happening? And I prayed with him. So it's a very interesting man. And he's never backed off his account of what happened. For those of you who don't know, Travis Walton was abducted decades ago. And this became the basis for a motion picture called Fire in the Sky.
Right. James Garner, Robert Patrick.
There you go.
Was the other actor was it D.B. Sweeney? Anyway, those are the two actors I recall from the film.
What's interesting is Travis is gone for 5 days. And when he's finally let go, you know, beamed down or whatever from the ship, and he calls his friends and they come and get him, he thinks he's been gone a couple of hours. That's what it seems like to him. And they go, Travis, you've been gone for 5 days. 5 days. He thinks he's been gone a couple of hours. And we hear this. Look, I've spoken to people who have been abducted. And it's, you know, there's actually someone I spoke to fairly recently. And, you know, I can never say names because I always try to protect people. But if I said this person's name, you would know them. Okay? You would know who they are. And they were driving in a car with a friend. And they awakened or they realized when they were put down again, and this is, I'm not making this stuff up, Derek, mm-hmm. okay? They were not on the same road. They were 50 miles from where they were last, where they last remembered, on another road going the wrong way, and they had lost 3 hours of time.
Mm.
And that's chilling. Recently, as of 72 hours ago, we had someone that called us, elder in the church. And this gets wacky. And this man was obviously freaked out, and that's an understatement. He's a Christian, and I talked to this man. I'm doing an interview with him for our Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural news magazine, e-magazine that we send out every month. And he's laying in bed with his wife, and he's awakened at around 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning, and he has an overwhelming sense of dread. There's something near the house, and he's sleeping in a king-size bed. He's on the left side of the bed, and his wife is between, is in the bed also obviously with him, and there's a wall which leads to the outside of the house. And he's paralyzed, and he's floating above the bed and being moved towards the wall, being moved toward, and he looks down and he sees, that he's 3 feet above the ground, floating towards the wall. And I told him, he asked me, he said, LA, what would have happened if I hadn't, changed changed what was going on? I said, they would have taken you through the wall. And of course, that's a physics which we don't understand, but that's what happens over and over and over again. They have the ability to manipulate space, time, matter, and energy in ways that we don't understand. But the angelicos, the good angels, do it too. When they pop in, when the good angel comes in and saves Peter, how does he get there? How do the chains drop off of Peter? How does that jail cell door open?
Right.
Why is it that the Roman guards are all switched off? How does the prison door open? I mean, the angel is manipulating space, time, matter, and energy because he can do that. Well, the fallen guys can do the same thing. So this guy, this elder of this church, getting back on track with the story, he couldn't even remember the name of Yeshua.
Hmm.
That's how fogged your brain gets. I've experienced a little bit of it when I've gone up against people who are demoniacs, and you get near them, and all of a sudden you're just hit, and it's like, whoa, what's my name again? Hmm. And he couldn't think of Jesus' name. Finally, he was able to think Yeshua. He couldn't say. He was paralyzed. But the moment he thought it, and then he could, he thought it out, and he was able to say it. That's when he broke it. And then, bam, it was like a rubber band snapping. Boom, he's back in bed just like, and of course, his wife didn't see anything or hear anything. So, look, this stuff is real. Mm-hmm. It's not, unfortunately, it's not, demonic delusion, or it's not an illusion. Some of it can be, and I understand that. It's not either or, it's both and.
Mm-hmm.
We're dealing with supernatural beings that have the ability to put thoughts in our heads, to change reality, but they also have abilities to manipulate space, time, matter, and energy in ways that we don't understand.
Let's draw the link to between that story and the account that Richard studied. Who or what might those entities inside those craft have been, in your opinion?
Well, there's two. We really don't know what a fallen angel looks like. We've got the account of a man that I interviewed with the Mothman way back in 1966, 67.
Right.
And this guy became a missionary. I'm desperately trying to think of his name, and I'll think of it in a minute. I'm sure it'll pop in. But he became a missionary in New Guinea. But before that, and of course, when he was in Papua New Guinea, he saw all sorts of supernatural stuff. I mean, literally. All sorts of stuff. So he became acquainted with it. So for whatever reason, the Mothman is appearing all over Point Pleasant, West Virginia. It's this winged entity, 7 to 8 feet tall, dark wings. Anybody who encounters this being is usually freaked out when they see it. He goes in his house and has dinner with his wife, and now they're sleeping in their bedroom. This guy was a very sound sleeper, and he awakens at 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning, and he looks at the road, and a car goes by him a distance. He's on the second floor, and he looks to the foot of the bed, and there's the Mothman. There's this winged entity, dark wings. And I said, what did it look like? And I got to tell you, when we were conversing, and I was interviewing him, we stopped two or three times and prayed, because just talking about it was extremely unsettling. And I get that. I mean, these entities are incredibly powerful and they short circuit us just like they do in the biblical narrative. When we deal with them, they're very difficult to deal with. And this entity had dark wings. His head was like shrunken down or had a cloak on. Hmm. It had hands. I mean, he saw the whole thing. And he was paralyzed. He couldn't speak, couldn't talk. The moment he began to think the blood of Yeshua, the blood of Jesus, that's when the thing backed off and then just disappeared. So what I think is what's in the craft, I think these are fallen angelic beings. I think the grays are a biologically created sort of a suit, if you will, that the demons can inhabit. The demons are the disembodied spirits of the Nephilim, in my opinion. And there are many who hold to that. Mm-hmm. The demons are the disembodied spirits of the Nephilim, and that's an hour conversation just to get into.
Yeah.
That gets back into Genesis 3, Genesis 6, but that's who the Nephilim were. They were disembodied spirits, and as the book of Enoch says, they will rise up against the men and women of earth because they proceeded from them, and they hate us. And so they become the demons. So the demons need something to inhabit, whether it's a herd of swine that when Jesus casts out legion from the demoniac, who are you? We're legion, we are many. Oh, don't cast us into the abyss. Let us go into that herd of pigs over there. Okay, so Yeshua allows them to do that. And, of course, the pigs commit suicide and run off the edge of the cliff and then are promptly drowned.
Mm-hmm.
So demoniacs, and I've encountered demoniacs. I've been in contact with people who are demonized. And it's no picnic to be around that and to have to deal with it. But I will if it comes across my path and the Lord tells me to engage, because that's what we're supposed to do. But it's still no picnic. It's no fun. But I believe that the grays are the disembodied spirits of the Nephilim in these biologically created suits. Interestingly enough, when I got there, and this is going on, I don't know, at least 15 years ago, I called up my acquaintance, and I would consider friend back then, David and I never met, David Flynn.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked David, I said, David, I got to ask you something. I'm going to run something by you. You know, the Roswell crash, what are we looking at here? And I presented my theory that the fallen one is creating these biological suits for the demons to inhabit. And he said, yes, I got there too. And that's what I think. So it was kind of cool that, we both sort of came into the same conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
I found that comforting in sort of an odd sort of way.
I'm not crazy.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, I want to shift gears back to politics again for the rest of the program here, because you mentioned something earlier on that I've been doing a lot of thinking, reading about lately because of some pushback that we've been getting on some of the programs that we've done. I've noticed an odd and I think disturbing trend. Whenever I report on or talk about the Islamic State, there's always a small subset of people that will say, well, you know, that's just a creation of the CIA and the Mossad. Well, okay, I disagree respectfully regarding the Mossad. I don't see any evidence that the Mossad was involved in creating the Islamic State, but certainly documents obtained by the watchdog group Judicial Watch show that the Defense Intelligence Agency back in 2013 was telling, or 2012, 12 or 13, I forget the year, but they were reporting to the White House and saying, stop supporting Al-Qaeda in Iraq because we're going to create an Islamic State there if we don't. Well, here we are. But the fact that they've been created by the West, and by the way, we're also responsible for the Taliban, that's the outgrowth of the Mujahideen that we collaborated with the Pakistani intelligence agency, the ISI, to create back to in the 70s to fight the Russians. They've gone rogue. I mean, the fact that they were basically supported and supplied by the United States and NATO doesn't change the fact that they still want to kill us. Okay. And yet there seems to be this strain within the body of professing Christian believers to say, well, the Jews are responsible for creating this group. And that somehow means that we shouldn't say anything bad about the Islamic State, that it's okay that they've walked these Coptic Christians to the shore of the Mediterranean and cut off their heads, that it's okay that they burned the Jordanian fighter pilot in a cage alive, that they killed 10 suspected homosexuals earlier this week in a town in Syria. Replacement theology, this idea that the church has somehow replaced Israel, the Jews, in God's favor because they broke covenant with him. how much of this anti-Jewish sentiment can we lay at the feet of this false doctrine?
I would say all of it. This has been going on since really the first century when so-called theologians began to bag on the Jews. And this is why Paul's writing, specifically in Hebrews and in other places, talks that the church is grafted in, and replacement theology, supersessionism, has done more to create a divide between the Jews, who are the chosen people of God, and the church, which is grafted in. They are two separate entities. The church is one thing, and the nation of Israel or the Jewish people are another. And the church needs to understand that the prophecies, or I should say this, that the supersessionists need to understand that the prophecies of the Bible regarding Israel are literal. And this is why we see Israel regathered back into its homeland. But as I blog, or it hasn't been posted yet, but the current pope is what I would consider a supersessionist. He is a replacement theology. He holds to that position. And so therefore, God has broken covenant with the Jewish people, blah, 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 blah. And that's why he sits there and votes literally to support a Palestinian state on the anniversary of Israel becoming a nation. There's no greater slap in the face, and it's deliberate. And it tells you exactly what the agenda is here. The same thing with Obama, no friend of Israel. Many so-called Christians, I won't mention them by name, hold to replacement theology, hold to this supersessionist ideology. And in my opinion, it's extremely dangerous because it then creates this very twisted view of Scripture. Because the fact is that Israel has been regathered from the four corners of the earth and set in its land, just like prophecy tells us to. And as we know from the prophetic discourse throughout the biblical narrative, that once that happens, I will reestablish you in your ancient homeland, never again to be cast off into the nations. Now, the Jews were cast off and became a byword, just like prophecy tells us. Mm-hmm. And they were scattered. I get that. And on the birth pangs of the Holocaust, where 6 million of them were slaughtered in the ovens of Germany, in the concentration camps of Germany, on the ashes of the Holocaust, on the birth pains of the Holocaust, becomes the nation of Israel. What most people don't understand, people will go, oh, the British helped them to do all this. Nothing could be further than the truth. People don't know their history. The British Armada were turning away the Jews who were desperately trying to get to what was then Palestine, modern-day Israel, from World War II. They were turned back and then re-put back into the concentration camps, which had been liberated. But, so they weren't concentration camps anymore, per se. They weren't being burned alive in the ovens or whatever, or, being starved to death. They were at least getting food and everything else, but they went back into the This went on for years, Derek. I mean, people don't understand this. Hmm. People also don't understand when you ask them, and I ask this question rhetorically sometimes during conferences, how many concentration camps, death camps, part of the gulag, for lack of a better word, gulag in the Third Reich under Nazism existed? And most people think about 50, 100, maybe 150. There were 20,000 camps throughout the Third Reich. Hmm. 20,000 camps. Now, not all of them were death camps, like Treblinka or Auschwitz, but there were 20. It was an industry of death, and that's what they did. And the final solution, and I written about this in the Cosmic Chess Match, the whole idea of this, of course, if you could kill all the Jews, then the prophecies of the Bible would not come to pass. God is a liar, follow me. That's what's at stake here, in my opinion. And it's extremely chilling. But what we see is exactly the opposite. It backfires on him. And the nation of Israel is reborn in a day. By the way, the United Nations votes on it, including Russia. Mm-hmm. So the idea of ISIS, rampaging through the Middle East, some of the blame of this can be laid at the feet of the Obama administration. We should have never left Iraq. And then you can go back to the Bush administration and lay the feet there, blame there. We never should have gone on Iraq anyway.
Right.
None of our, the Ron Paul, Rand Paul idea of, what are we doing with 800 military bases throughout the globe? why the heck did we go into Iraq? You know, weapons of mass destruction. I don't think so. They had sarin gas. I get that. They had, and they gassed the Kurds. We all understand that.
Mm-hmm.
What we did is we have no idea of this war between Shia and Sunni Muslim, and the death toll in Iraq happens every 10 to 15 days. There's another suicide bombing, 50, 60, 100 people. This secular war, this war between different sects of Islam, between the Sunni and Shia, is ongoing. They need a strong man. I've written about this. Watch what the King of Jordan does. I do believe that ISIS was created by the U.S. with the help of the Jordanians. They were created to go in and topple Assad. We've been doing this kind of nonsense and, you know, since JFK and before that, the Cold War. They were armed by us. They were created by us, and then they went rogue. They have nothing to do with us now, but they went rogue, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And they were armed and said, "What are we doing here? We've got all this stuff. Why should we fight the Americans? They're the infidel. Let's take this over for ourselves." And now they've cut great swaths throughout the country. They are licking their chops at Jordan, and of course, on the other side of Jordan is Jerusalem, and that's the prize.
Mm-hmm.
Jerusalem is always the prize. So again, this ties into the biblical narrative of the Psalm 83 war, which then or Isaiah 17 or Ezekiel 38, Ezekiel 39. It's ramping up in ways I've never seen. And the fact that Obama has no, remember, you know, it's so funny. We elect these guys. Obama had zero international political experience at all. This guy is a rank amateur.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we see that what he's done is created a global chaos because we're not leading anymore. And you know, we're not carrying a big stick and speaking softly. We're not leading. He's defanged our military. He pulled all of our guys out of Iraq and everything else. So, you know, some of the blame is on his feet. Some of the blame is on the Bush administration for going in there in the first place. The bottom line is Israel is the only democratic state in the entire region, and it is now surrounded by those who want to destroy her. And so World War III is looming now that the Ruskies are in there, and it's going to get nasty. You know, I've been saying this for months. It's going to get nasty, and so far it hasn't gotten nasty. But we all know that you know, war is like a heartbeat away over there.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to happen at some
point. It's really distressing when you look at the situation there. And I commented on this the other day on a report that I posted. Reports coming out of the Middle East, which have been circulating through the major media over the last month or so. And I just noticed it over last weekend as the New York Times wrote an article that for years now, our soldiers in Afghanistan in particular have been complaining that allies, mm-hmm. the military commanders, the tribal leaders, some who have been appointed to positions of authority on our military bases, like a police commander at one of our military bases, our soldiers are being told to look the other way when these guys who are supposed to be our allies in the fight against the Taliban are abusing, sexually abusing boys and young men on our bases. And our military is telling our soldiers, turn the other way. It's part of their culture. One Marine who was shot dead later by a so-called T-boy, a domestic servant, sometimes used as a sexual slave, called his father and said, "We can hear the boys screaming at night and our officers won't let us do anything about it." These are the men who are our allies in this supposed fight to democratize Afghanistan. And when I talked to a Pentagon strategist the other day, he told me, yeah, it's pretty well known in the Middle East that that goes on. It's a status symbol among men of a certain rank, mm-hmm. to have an entourage of boys, young boys and that are dancing boys, T-boys, basically sex toys for these men. Mm-hmm. And it just makes you wonder, why are we even... What are we doing? What's the point? What's the purpose?
And of course, what's bizarre about this is Islam. This is the face of Islam.
Yes.
It's cultural.
It's not an Afghan thing.
We see this all throughout the Middle East.
Yes.
It's so duplicitous, I can't even believe it. They will make sure that their women wear, you know, burkas so we can't see them, any lock of hair or any skin at all, blah, 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 blah. And yet it's somehow it's okay to indulge in blatant perversion like this homosexual relationship with these boys, these transvestite boys who are dressed up as women. I mean, it's nothing can be more sick than this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is absolute insanity. I mean, it is. It's absolute insanity. And this is who we're partnering with. See, the problem is it's like everything in this country has become so politically correct. You know, Ben Carson stands up and this is on the blog today, Bully for Ben, and says that a Muslim would be at odds with our Constitution. And he's right. He's absolutely right, because Sharia trumps everything. Mm-hmm. Sharia is itself a political ideology. And this is what the politically correct crowd don't really understand, that this is what we're up against here in this country. And it's just,
yeah.
I got news for you. These people will never rest until the United States bends the knee to Allah. And that's the end game here. That's the goal.
Right.
And anyone who doesn't believe that has got their head in the sand and doesn't understand that Islam is not a religion. It's a political ideology. And its goal is to create an Islamic caliphate on a global level.
Yeah. And as we're recording this, the 25th of September in 2015. This week we had the story of the clock boy from Irving, Texas, Ahmed Mohammed.
Nonsense.
Yes, and evidence has come out now in the aftermath of all the hoopla, where he was invited to the White House and President Obama.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Evidence has come out that this young man, 3 weeks into his first year of high school in Irving, Texas, brings a Radio Shack electronic clock that he's disassembled, put into a suitcase, making it look for all the world like a suitcase bomb. Gets unresponsive, passive aggressive when he's questioned, and so winds up getting arrested because he basically provoked the situation. Turns out that his father is a known Islamic activist who's engaged in a number of publicity stunts, including a debate with that pastor down in Florida, Terry.
Yeah.
I can't recall his last name, but the guy who was going to burn the Quran as a publicity stunt engaged in a debate with this kid's father. And according to the mayor of Irving, Texas, who, by the way, is in the crosshairs of the Council on American Islamic Relations for supporting or sponsoring some legislation in Texas to force American courts to disregard any ruling by a Sharia court.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. She's the one who's apparently in the crosshairs of this to make Irving, Texas look bad. Apparently, there's evidence that President Obama tweeted a tweet to this clock kid before the picture of the clock kid in the story ever went national. So a little coordination behind the scenes between CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations, and the White House. It is coming to America. And I hate to sound like an alarmist, because I tend to view you know, the folks who type in all caps with multiple exclamation points on the internet as looking for stories that reinforce their prejudices. And I don't want to be that guy. I don't think we as Christians are served if we're spreading half-truths and untruths in order to try to get people to, you know, the gospel doesn't need lies, okay, to move to advance. God will achieve his ends without me embellishing the truth. But it appears to me that there is an agenda at work here, and that our White House is at the very least ignorant, or at the worst complicit. And I'm not sure which is worse in what's going on.
Well, this whole thing with Clock Boy, there's an actual YouTube video. Some guy showed that you can make this thing, this supposed clock, in about 30 seconds. All Ahmed did was take the innards from another clock and dump it into a suitcase.
Right.
I mean, this is such nonsense. And the fact that, you know, Obama, yeah, nice clock, Ahmed, why don't you come to the White House? You know, it's just like, but he never, it's always towards the Muslim guy. He won't talk about the Christians who were slaughtered by ISIL. He won't call them Christians.
Right.
You know, he never invites anybody who's a Christian to the White House that just got their son and daughter killed by Islamic jihadists or whatever. He's in my opinion, and I realize this, you know, I'll probably lose a lot of people by saying this, we have a Muslim in the White House. That's what he is. I believe that the Saudi money put him there. We know Chuck Messer has stated it, and I'm in good company when Uncle Chuck speaks.
Amen.
And I can, you know, emulate him on some level. But, you know, Chuck said very, very, we know nothing about this man. We don't. Derek, this is the biggest bunch of nonsense that's ever come down the pike.
Yeah.
The fact that this guy can read a teleprompter and stand up there, we don't even know who his father is, the whole idea of the birth certificate, and people like Whoopi Goldberg will look at me and laugh and call me you know, all sorts of names and everything else. You know, the bottom line is Whoopi isn't interesting that the woman in Hawaii dies mysteriously in a plane crash.
Yeah,
You know, how does that work? And on and on. We know nothing about this guy except that he's no friend of Israel, and he's shown us that. He's defanged the military, and he's all too quick to sing the praises of this, you know, clock boy Ahmed, which turns out to be a total scam. And as usual, our media, you know, oh, look at this, you know, it's Islamophobia, blah, 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 blah. Folks, what people don't understand, these are vipers in our laps. And unless we understand what we're dealing with, and we don't, the politically correct crowd, all you need to do is look at Germany and what's happening with Merkel and the crew over there. There's a million Islamists who have poured into Europe, and that will change the cultural fabric of that entire continent within 6 months, guaranteed.
Yeah.
Look at the social unrest. And we're taking, what, 10 or 20,000? John Kerry, well, we need to take more. What about the Saudi Arabians who've got the tent city?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these people are crazy. Our leaders are allowing these people into this country. Just remember the Fort Hood shooter, folks. It's all you got to think about. Who yelled, Allahu Akbar, and then blew away 13 people, including a pregnant woman begging for the life of her unborn child, and shot her in cold blood. Why? Because the Quran says specifically, and you can, you know, I love it. Kerr will sit there and call me an Islamophobe and all this other nonsense, but it's right there. And he became radicalized. Well, how do we know who's going to become radicalized and who isn't?
Mm-hmm.
This is what we're faced with in this country.
Yeah.
Vipers in our laps.
One final question, L.A. Days of Chaos, Watchers 9, the new DVD in the series, the book Days of Chaos. What do you hope that viewers, readers will take away as the overarching message of these of the book and the DVD?
Well, here's the deal. The book Days of Chaos deals with a lot of subjects that we don't get into. For instance, the Fukushima disaster.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole chapter on Fukushima and the ongoing result that is there. The Watchers 9 Days of Chaos doesn't really get into the whole UFO phenomenon like I do in Days of Chaos, or the replacement program known as the breeding program, which I, you know, really get into in the book. So they're really standalone. It's like the book covers different subjects than the video and vice versa. The takeaway is this. These are the days of chaos. In my opinion, they do reflect what is going on, or they reflect back to the biblical narrative that states unequivocally what will happen in the days preceding the return of the king. The wars and rumors of wars, the famines, pestilence, earthquakes in the first place is troublesome times. This is where we are, Derek. This is where we are. And it's happening as we speak. And so it's really, I call the Days of Chaos, the book, an end times handbook, because in my opinion, that's what it really is.
Mm. Watchers 9, Days of Chaos, the new DVD, the book Days of Chaos, both by L.A. Marzulli, the DVD by L.A. Marzulli and Richard Shaw. Those will be out October 5th. Is that correct?
Roughly, yes. Right around October 5th.
Okay. Well, very good. And we'll put links in the show notes to L.A.'s website where you can find the book and the DVD. And L.A., always an education and a privilege to talk with you, my friend.
Well, likewise, Derek, and I hope to see you soon on maybe Skywatch. We'll see what happens.
A couple of clicks will take you right to LA's website, his blog, and the Acceleration Radio site. Those links will be in the show notes, as always, at vftb.net. And if we don't see him sooner, and I hope it is sooner, because I'd like to get him down here to the Ozarks to talk about the books for the new book and the new DVD for Skywatch TV. But certainly we will see him next summer, because he's one of the speakers at the Rocky Mountain International Prophecy Conference, which is co-sponsored by Skywatch TV and Prophecy Watchers. We talked a bit about that with Doc Marquis a couple of weeks ago, so I won't spend too much time on it. Just drop a few names of some of the speakers, because now these are confirmed. We are now at liberty to disclose. Gary Stearman and Tom Horn, of course, I will be there. Chuck Missler. Yeah. How I got on this list. It's because I get to hold the microphone is basically what it is. Chuck Missler will be there. LA, of course, Randall Price talking about the location of Solomon's Temple and a potential location for the third temple of interest to prophecy watchers. Bill Koenig, Avi Lipkin, Joel Richardson, Carl Tykrib, who did such a great job last year. Excited to see him back again. Dr. Michael Lake, Josh Peck, Timothy Mahoney, the filmmaker behind Patterns of Evidence, the documentary film about the evidence for the Exodus. Had the opportunity to interview him a few weeks back and, a couple of months ago now, I guess. But he will be in Colorado Springs to talk about what went into the making of the movie and the new project that he's working on to get kids excited about archaeology from a Christian perspective. Of course, Chris Putnam will be there. Doc Marquis, I mentioned. Dr. Doug Stauffer, of course. Paul McGuire, Joseph Farah, WorldNet Daily, and Colonel Bob McGinnis. Those are the confirmed speakers at this point. You'll find more information at prophecywatchers.com. And registration for that event, which is going to be limited to 1,000 people in person so that it doesn't get too crowded and the logistics don't get too difficult. The registration will open at prophecywatchers.com on October 13th. So that is the date for that. Just a couple of quick notes from the news. Things are getting even more complex in the Middle East now as Russia has loaded in and is now carrying out a bunch of airstrikes inside Syria. And who you believe as far as your news source, really, sometimes it comes down to, you know, who you want to believe, I think. Russia is claiming that they're going after ISIS. People on the ground are saying, no, they're attacking other, you know, so-called moderate rebels. It does appear, based on what we can kind of piece together from various news sources and from information that Colonel Bob McGinnis has shared with us, that Russia has, in fact, been going after rebel groups that the United States has been supporting with arms, with training, and so forth, and to whom we'd made some promises of protection from airstrikes. Now, that raises a very difficult question, because Fox News and other outlets were reporting on Friday that there were strategists inside the Pentagon who were weighing our options for defending these rebel groups against the Russians. And, you know, of course, my reaction was, what? We're going to risk a shooting war with Russia over al-Qaeda-linked rebel groups that we've been supporting in Syria? Are we insane? Well, Colonel McGinnis said it's not quite that way. Folks inside the Pentagon, where cooler heads are prevailing, apparently, are trying to deconflict, was the word that he used, deconflict with the Russians to make sure that our planes aren't in the same space as their planes at the same time. But there are hawks inside Washington, D.C., John McCain, probably foremost among them, agitating for the creation of a no-fly zone over Syria. I mean, really, Russia's planes are already in Syria. So what? You have to tow them out back to Moscow? This is nuts. And I don't know that there is a good outcome there at this point. I think there may just be a least bad. I asked Colonel McGinnis, since we've done such a poor job of containing ISIS, obviously, and the $500 million program to arm and train rebels in Turkey and send them across the border to fight against ISIS has been just a spectacular fail. At last count, we have something like 5 fighters that are actually fighting. And this is according to General Lloyd Austin, who's the head of U.S. CENTCOM, the man in charge, admitting to Congress that, you know, 4 or 5 guys of the original group that we trained and sent across the border, that those 54 guys went over in mid-August are still fighting. The rest of them gave up. They were ambushed about 15 minutes inside Syria, and it appears that somebody in Turkey tipped off the al-Nusra Front inside Syria. Al-Nusra Front is the al-Qaeda group in Syria. Well, the second group of 75 that we sent across with much fanfare, okay, the first guys didn't do so great, but we got 75 new trainees. They're going over across the border, and they immediately handed their weapons over to the al-Nusra Front. So, and by the way, al-Nusra Front is one of the groups apparently apparently hit by at least one Russian airstrike over the last few days. So, but there are other groups like the Free Syrian Army to whom we have made promises. And I asked Colonel McGinnis, can we just say, okay, Mr. Putin, you really want this war? It's all yours. You take them on. And the Russians have some reasons to want to fight ISIS. A couple thousand Chechens are apparently in Syria fighting on behalf of the Islamic State. And if you remember your history, Russia fought about a 20-year war of insurrection in Chechnya. The Chechens don't want to be part of Russia. Russia doesn't want to let them go. And President Putin has no stomach for reopening that can of worms. So he'd rather, well, same reason we went over there, apparently, to fight them over there so we didn't have to fight them over here. So we'll see how this goes. But anyway, I asked Colonel McGinnis, why can't we just, you know, pick up our stuff and go home and just leave it to the Russians? And he said, well, you know, that is an option, of course, but there are consequences to that. We have made promises to groups in the area. We've made promises to NATO. We've made promises to Turkey and other groups. And if we were just renege and walk away, American prestige around the world would be affected. And he said, we're already seeing some consequences with it in the way the Chinese are expanding influence in the South China Sea. Put bluntly, the foreign policy of this administration will take decades to fix. Come quickly, Lord Jesus, because that will be a quicker fix. But yeah, it is absolutely, we are absolutely at the point right now where people in Washington, D.C. are openly floating the idea of allying with Al-Qaeda in Syria. That is how twisted this. Now, wait a minute. I thought we went over there to get Al-Qaeda in the first place back in 2001. Does anyone remember this? This is absolutely insane. Meanwhile, terror in the West Bank in Israel is on the upswing. In fact, the old city of Jerusalem and the Temple Mount were restricted. Access was limited to men over the age of 50. The old city closed down to Palestinians except for residents, shop owners, and school children. In other words, no adults, unless you could prove that you lived there or had a shop there. Temple Mount, again, men over the age of 50. It's getting tense, and it is truly bizarre. Of course, you know, Pope Francis had his grand tour of the United States last week. I won't, you know, talk much about that, but I do note that as soon as he left town, pagans descended on New York City for the 15th annual Pagan Pride Festival. So, yeah, Washington Square Park in New York City, Wiccans, Druids, witches, Kemetics, selling infused olive oil, chanting goddess names, and shouting, "Pagans represent Bernie," meaning Bernie Sanders, who is giving Hillary Clinton more of a run for her money than she expected for the Democratic nomination for president. It's like we're in an alternate universe. This is just bizarre. Oh my. Well, anyway, coming up on A View from the Bunker, this Wednesday, an interview you're really going to find informative and somewhat disturbing. And that is a talk with the author of the book, The Pentagon's Brain, Annie Jacobson, New York Times bestselling author of previous books that documented the history of Operation Paperclip and Area 51. Now, and both of those, by the way, though, both those books are being developed into television series. One by Gail Ann Hurd, who was a producer of The Alien, several of the Alien movies, and a number of other very well-known things. And Chris Carter, the creator and writer of many of the X-Files episodes, creator of the X-Files, developing the history of Area 51 for TV, and the Operation Paperclip book being developed by Brad Pitt's production company. So we were very fortunate to get Annie Jacobson find a slot in her schedule where she could talk to us. And that interview about DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, will upload Wednesday on VFTB.net. And then next Sunday, Patrick Wood, author of Technocracy Rising, kind of analyze what's been going on in, with the UN and the 2030 agenda and the Pope addressing the United Nations, his calls for changing our economic systems and his comments on on our politics, basically. What is Pope Francis trying to accomplish here, and how should we Christians interpret what he had to say? So we'll talk with Patrick Wood this week. You'll hear that next Sunday night, God willing, on A View from the Bunker. Our Sunday morning Bible study, Gilbert House Fellowship, which we upload every Sunday morning, mid-morning, late morning usually. We're getting through the book of Deuteronomy now and finding that there's a lot more stuff in there than we ever expected. Just little references all through the Bible, if you're really paying attention, that emphasize that the Bible is a chronicle of the long history between those rebellious members of the spirit realm, call them fallen angels or watchers or whatever you want to call them, and God, as he called out Abraham, developed his descendants into a chosen people from which the Messiah would come, and the attempts of the these rebellious Elohim to distract, infiltrate, corrupt, or just flat out kill the Israelites. And that goes a long way toward explaining why some of the punishment for disobedience to Yahweh was kind of harsh. I mean, from our 21st century postmodern worldview, it seems pretty harsh. But you're talking about high stakes game there. You're talking about the fate of the entire of all creation, the fate of all human souls ever. And it makes it a little easier to understand. Anyway, those upload every week, Sunday mornings. Like I said, right now, going through the book of Deuteronomy, all those are archived and available to listen to at gilberthouse.org. This coming Tuesday night, Steve Quayle and Timothy Alberino come to Skywatch TV talking about their new documentary series, True Legends, the first installment, Technology of the Fallen. And a fascinating look at what Timothy Alberino did, his investigations in Peru and Ecuador and on the island of Sardinia, traveling around to pull together information and the research for the documentary film. And Tom Horn hosts the program Tuesday night, 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 8:30 Central Time on the Christian Television Network. That's DirecTV 376 or Dish Network Channel 267. If you don't have satellite TV, you can watch it on the internet. The Christian Television Network streams their programs live to the internet at ctnonline.com. And Skywatch TV follows Prophecy Watchers. So if you tune in a half an hour early, you see our good friend Gary Stearman and the fascinating discussions that they host over there. So again, that's Tuesday evening, Skywatch TV at 9:30 p.m. Eastern, 8:30 p.m. Central Time. A View from the Bunker is a production of Gilbert House and released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives 4.0 International License. The opening theme is by Kevin MacLeod, www.incompetech.com. Remember, we wrestle not against flesh and blood. I'm Derek Gilbert, and this is A View from the Bunker.